This is the Life Church Podcast.
All right. Are you guys, hey, you know, we're just a week out from Christmas, and, you know, it kind of begs the question, are you ready? You can say yes, no, yes. Some of you ready? No. Some of you not ready? Some of you guys are like scratching your heads, I haven't bought her gift yet, you know, right? No? Some of you are? I mean, it's just a reality. We go to a lot of great lengths of trying to get ready for Christmas, you know. We right around Thanksgiving, right after Thanksgiving, we buy a Christmas tree and set it up. I know that's how it is in our house. We have a live Christmas tree, not a fake, but a real tree. And so we set that up in our house, you know, and my wife, you know, sometimes we'll sit undecorated for about a day or two, but then my wife kind of gets tired of that, and she says, okay, go down. We have a barrel. We have a 55-gallon drum barrel down in our basement that thing has been with us for many, many, many years. It's what we originally shipped all of our stuff in a container to Bangladesh on, and so it's this big round barrel. It has all of our Christmas stuff in it, you know, and so we bring that up, and then she starts decorating. We go to a lot of things to decorate, put lights up, you know. We start having hot cocoa around our house, which we never have hot cocoa around our house, you know. But around Christmas time, it's the time to do it, you know. We max out credit cards. Not me, I don't, but and you shouldn't either, but it happens around Christmas time. You know, we buy Christmas gifts and we use up our credit cards. We do a lot of that in preparation for this thing we call Christmas, right? And here at Life Church, we do the same thing. We prepare for Christmas, but not so much like that. But what we prepare for is we want to be able to prepare our hearts for Christmas. Yeah, it's not just the external stuff that we're talking about. So some of the internal, we want to be intentional that our hearts are ready to celebrate the birth of Jesus. And so we will spend time during the holiday season just talking about that. And next week, I would encourage you, be sure to invite your friends and come. It's going to be a fantastic service. But it's about this. It's about celebrating the birth of Jesus Christ. In this, you know, this season in the church calendar, it's called the season of Advent. So 4 weeks leading up to Christmas. And maybe you grew up celebrating Advent as kind of a religious ceremony in your church. It's possible you did that. Millions and millions and millions of people do that around the world. They celebrate Advent in this way. And to this day, and in fact today, as I'm standing here, around the world, there are billions of Christians that are celebrating, whether they're doing it in a religious way or whether they're just doing it as a way to express how they love the season. They are celebrating the birth of Jesus Christ, that he came to save the world from its sin, to rescue this fallen world. It's a season of preparation. And I guess I'm asking you, are you ready for Christmas? Not just do you have all the gifts purchased, do you have all the decorations up, but is your heart ready for the celebration of the birth of Jesus Christ? Is it? The word Advent actually means coming. That's the definition of it, the literal definition of coming. And in the church world and throughout church history, it's had a twofold purpose. The first is to talk about the original coming of Jesus, the birth of Jesus Christ, and that we celebrate the birth of Jesus Christ and that we remember how those early people that were there during the birth of Christ, how they were anticipating the first coming of Jesus. But it also means something else. It's also intent for us to be alert and ready for the second coming of Jesus. So in Advent, we celebrate the birth of Jesus, but we also anticipate the return of Jesus. Now, I realize that Christmas time, we don't oftentimes think about the return of Jesus. That's not something that's in our mind. We're thinking about baby Jesus. We're thinking about presents under the tree. We're thinking about, you know, how much money we're negotiating. How much money are we going to spend for Christmas this year? And we look at our budgets. And that's really, this season gets consumed with that, with kind of talking about gifts, right? But it also has to do with the fact that Jesus is coming back, and those two are inseparable. You can't talk about Advent without talking about the first coming of Jesus, but also the return of Christmas. It's a time to learn to live with what someone's called the already, but the not yet. And I suspect that some of you, you may not phrase it that way, but are living in an already but not yet kind of situation right now to this day, this day, right? See, Jesus came, he's already come, but he's coming again. He's coming again, but just not yet. So what does it look like to live in that kind of anticipation? The already, but the not yet. I know it sounds like I'm being a little bit mystical here with my language, and you're wondering, but let me kind of explain what it's like. You know, this time of year can be excruciatingly difficult for children. I know you might not agree with it. You're all adults here. You're thinking, nah, kids have it easy. They're getting gifts, right? But it's excruciatingly difficult because they're having to learn to wait. They're having to learn to live in the already, but the not yet. Because, see, what you did is you went right around Thanksgiving, after Thanksgiving, and bought your Christmas tree. And you set that thing up, and you start putting lights all over the house, and you start decorating. I know in our house, you know, we have a TV in our living room, but that TV disappears mysteriously. And my wife says, no more TV in this house till after Christmas. You know, she doesn't say that. That's not true. But yeah, the TV disappears because, you know, it gets all decorated for Christmas, you know, and so you start doing it. And kids, they're observing this, right? And especially if they're like 4 or 5 years old, they're like, what's going on? You know, and you explain, it's Christmas, you know, there's Christmas presents, there's gifts. And they're like, is today Christmas? And you're like, oh, no, not yet. We still have 25. Remember those calendars, those countdown calendars? That was like torture for kids. Every day they'd look at the calendar and say, what? You know, you would think that was exciting, but for kids, they're like, ah, oh, because you see 25 more days, 24 more days, 23 more days. It's an eternity, right? And so is it Christmas yet? No, not yet. Is it Christmas yet? But the presents are there. The presents, why can't I open? Because it's not time yet. It's that already, but not yet. We live in the in-between of the already and the not yet. You see, Jesus was born. The gift has been given. It's been wrapped. It has your name on it. But you're not going to fully receive that gift until Jesus comes again, so we're waiting. And the challenge with waiting is that the longer you wait, the easier it is to start losing hope. So I guess what I'm doing this morning, it's not part of a series, but I want to speak to you about this Advent season and this idea of Christmas, and I'm particularly want to speak to you this morning if you're here and you may feel a bit hopeless in circumstances or situation you find yourself in, because you've been waiting and waiting and waiting a long time, and you've kind of lost hope, right? Have you lost hope? Can you think of, does something come to mind that you've waited for? And maybe originally you were hopeful, you had anticipation that it was going to, but you've waited long enough now that you're starting to lose hope. And I think really that's where God's people were on Christmas Eve 2,000 plus years ago. They had begun to lose hope. They had been hearing about the promised Messiah, but man, they've been waiting for so long, so long. And so on that Christmas morning, you know, right before Jesus was born, we sing songs about it, you know, and we have all kinds of great things that we say about it. But I imagine that there was a lot of people that they no longer were waiting with eager expectation. They were struggling. You see, because the Old Testament is full of prophecies that talk about the coming of Jesus. There's 300 plus prophecies in the Old Testament that talk about the coming of Jesus. In fact, the first prophecy goes all the way back to Genesis chapter 3. So they weren't waiting 5 years or 10 years for the promise of the Messiah. They were waiting millennia for the promise of the Messiah. Thousands of years they had been waiting. They'd heard, but now, you know, generations have come and gone, and they just haven't really received their promise yet fulfilled. And then we find ourselves in the season in which Jesus comes to this earth. In fact, you've probably heard me talk about this, the intertestamental period. It's the time frame. It's 400 years called the intertestamental period. 400 years between the ending of the Old Testament and the beginning of the New Testament. Chronologically speaking, the last book in the Bible, in the Old Testament, chronologically speaking, Malachi is the last, but the chronologically is Nehemiah. He was building a temple. And then after that, you don't, nothing. There's no prophets that come up. There's nobody coming up saying anymore, hey, the Messiah is coming, the Messiah is coming. For 400 years, there was silence. In fact, publishers, Bible publishers in years past, they don't do this anymore, but in years past, they would put a blank sheet of paper between the Old and the New Testament just as a metaphor to represent the silence that happened during those 400-year, during that 400-year period. So for 400 years, they hadn't heard anything. And for them, it seemed as if God had gone dark, as if God was AWOL. Tired of waiting. And then to top things off, as the time when Jesus comes, the first time the birth of Christ happens, they were under Roman domination. And so it was like an exclamation point in their lives. God, have you just abandoned us? Are you even around? Are you present? I'm sure there's some of you here today that you feel the same way. You've been waiting for a long, long time for God to rescue you. And at first, maybe you had, you know, you had kind of hope, but now you've been waiting so long that you're just tired of waiting. It's just been a long way and you're losing hope. We're not good at waiting. I'm not good at waiting. Okay, I won't speak for you. I'm not good at waiting. Or let me just pull up. How many like to wait? Okay, see, I knew I was right on that one. I'm not good at waiting. In fact, one of the things that is not necessarily people get excited about, you might judge me for this, it's fine if you judge me for this, is theme parks. I don't get excited about theme parks, right? Disneyland, you know, we had Knott's Berry Farm and Six Flags and those kind of, I don't get excited. I know kids sometimes, you know, rides and all that, but as an adult now, and maybe when I was younger, I didn't like it that much either, but I don't get excited about paying exorbitant amounts of money to go into a crowded park to wait in long, long, long lines to finally get on a ride that lasts maybe 3 minutes and then you're done. You know, that's not fun. Sorry. So, yeah, anyways, some of you are like, Rich, you're kind of dashing my dreams. But what I understand is that, and that's probably true. A lot of people probably feel that way. In fact, I hear that Disney World is, you know, they're kind of trying to alleviate the problem of long lines, and so they've kind of created this concierge service where you can stand in line, and then you can, I don't know if it, I think it's for a fee, but I'm not exactly sure. I've never been to Disney World, but you can stand in line and pay a fee and actually save your spot in line. And then that way you can go off and do other things. You can go off to another line and stand in that line instead, if you like. I know I'm being, some of you are like, don't talk about Disney. But, you know, and then you come back after they tell you for a period of time, come back and you get to your spot in line, but you're still waiting in line, right? And so some of these theme parks, they've kind of gotten really novel, and they've got now this digital thing that will tell you, like if you come up to this sign and you're standing here, like this line here, it'll tell you from this point on, you can expect to wait 20 more minutes to get on the ride, or 30 more minutes to get on the ride, or 5 days to get on the ride, whatever. That it feels like 5 days actually, but that you can expect that. And those signs don't work for me, because honestly, if I've been waiting in line, then there's a little sign that says 20 more minutes from this point. I'm like, why am I even standing in this line? 2 minutes in a line is way too long for me. So that's not good, you know. And so, anyways, and it happens like in highways. You know, we used to live in L.A. area, and so you're driving through the highways in L.A., and sometimes those highways are so packed and crowded, you know. And then they have these signs up there that say, exit number so-and-so is 30 minutes or 45 minutes. And then you realize, well, that exit number is only like 3 miles away, but you got a 40-minute wait before you get to that exit. You know, it's just, yeah, it's very discouraging. In your mind, you're like, okay, how can I cut through here and there, you know, to find my way around to get out of this place, you know? But that's it. But here's the thing. At least there's a sign. So if you're waiting, if you're like me, you don't like waiting. But if there's a sign, a digital sign that says to you, hey, 20 more minutes, 30 more minutes, 5 days, you know, whatever it might be. You may not like that it's 20 more minutes, but at least you know that it is 20 more minutes, right? And that would be great if we had those in our life as well. Like maybe you needed a job. You've been looking for a job, the right job. And it's not happening, but there's a sign suddenly that says, hey, 4 months from now, you will be gainfully employed. You will love your job 4 months from now. 4 months is a long time to wait, but at least you know that 4 months from now, you'll have the job. Or if, you know, you're waiting to get married. You've been waiting to get married. You've been waiting a long time to get married. And there's suddenly a sign in your life that, hey, a year and a half from now, you're going to be happily married. That is at least positive. It's a year and a half. It seems like a long, long wait. But at least you know that it's only a year and a half away. And so that's good. Or maybe you've been waiting for your husband to just one time, just once, you know, without being told to or anything. Just put the toilet seat down one time. Right? And you've been waiting a long, long, long time for that miracle to happen, you know? But if there was a sign that said to you, hey, from this point on, you're going to wait the rest of your natural existence for that to happen, at least you don't. No, you have to go to drastic measures for that to happen. That's another sermon. But we just had a sign like that in our life, right? But the problem is that that's just not the life that we're living. We're not living a life where we're given guarantees along the way so that we can kind of keep our faith going or belief going or our hope going. That's not really the life that we're living. And that's really the world that Jesus was born into. They've waited for so long and they've begun to lose hope. Is the Messiah ever going to come? And I'm guessing that some of you understand that. You've been waiting for God to rescue you as well. You've been waiting on him to cure the cancer, to fix the finances, to heal your marriage, to overcome your addiction, to give you some kind of victory in life. For a while, you kind of felt hopeful. You felt like it was going to happen. You thought for sure this is going to happen, but now you've waited long enough to where you're just not sure anymore, and you're starting to lose hope. And I think when we lose hope, we respond in different ways. The first way we respond is we decide to become independent. It's really the world that we live in. When you've trusted in somebody or trusted in something, and that just hasn't come through yet, you make the decision that, you know what, I can only count on myself. I can only do it myself. I'm not going to count on anyone else. There is no planned rescue, so I guess I'm just going to have to take things into my own hands. I'm going to put my hope in me. And, you know, honestly, that sounds like a pretty appealing thing, you know, when you don't have to wait for somebody else, you know, okay, I'm about to get myself in trouble. Like, you know, when I don't have to wait for my wife to finish getting dressed for me to leave or ready, you know, sounds like, hey, that's a good idea. When it's on your time and it's within your control and it's predictable because you're making up the decision, it sounds appealing. Except you sooner or later discover that not everything is in your control. And before long, you realize that you really can't control your spouse's feelings. You can't control your children's decisions. You can't control a doctor's diagnosis. And so independence, while sounding appealing, is not really a solution to hopelessness. And so consequently, when that's not working, we then become indignant, right? We're angry, we're resentful towards God and towards life because things really haven't worked out the way we expected them to work out. And so we're just mad. God is not coming through. There's a Holocaust survivor that said it this way. If this is the best God can do, why doesn't he resign and let someone more competent take his place? That's harsh words, seemingly. And I know that some of you here, you would never say those words, but I can bet that there are some of you here, though, that feel that way. This Christmas, you're angry. You're tired of waiting. You've been waiting a long, long, long time. And you remember this time last year when you were full of hope. You thought it was going to happen, but now you've been waiting so long that things have not changed. You're just tired of waiting. tired of waiting to get married. You're tired of waiting to conceive. You're tired of waiting for that financial miracle to happen in your life. You're tired of the chemo. You're tired of taking care of that sick child. You're tired. You're just tired of waiting. You're drowning in hopelessness. And when we lose hope, we usually end up becoming indifferent. It's kind of a defense mechanism, a survival technique. We just can't let ourselves care anymore. And so we just take on this attitude, this whatever attitude. Yeah, whatever, you know. I don't care anymore. We allow our hearts to grow cold and we allow ourselves to become just basically indifferent to the world around us. I think Lewis Meads kind of puts it really well. That's what he says. Waiting is our destiny. As creatures who cannot by themselves bring about what they hope for, we wait in the darkness for a flame we cannot light. We wait in fear for a happy ending that we cannot write. We wait for a not yet that feels like a not ever. Waiting is the hardest work of hope. And how many of you would agree with that statement? Waiting is the hardest work of hope. It's the reality. And that was really true for Israel around the time of Jesus as well. They had waited such a long time that I could assume and believe that they had lost hope. They had lost hope. They were hopeless in their waiting. There's two examples that we find in the city of Jerusalem that Luke kind of brings out of people who had waited a long time, but they had not lost hope. And I think if you knew that, if you understood that there is a possibility of waiting a long time, waiting, and that there's a capacity, the possibility of actually still maintaining your hope, wouldn't you want to know that? Wouldn't you want to know how to do that? Well, we find here Luke tells us in the Christmas story of two people who did not lose hope. The first person is a guy named Simeon. Simeon was hanging out in the temple area when Joseph and Mary showed up with Jesus to dedicate Jesus in the temple. That was mandated by law. They had to do it. And so they're there when Simeon runs into them. And this is what happens. At that time, there was a man in Jerusalem named Simeon. He was righteous and devout and was eagerly waiting. We'll have to talk about that in a second. He was eagerly waiting for the Messiah to come and rescue Israel. Eagerly waiting, really? Who eagerly waits? Do any of you, somebody in the second service, after second service came up to me, hey, I have an example of somebody eagerly waiting. And then he talked about, like waiting at the altar, a guy waiting at the altar for the bride to come down the aisle. And I'm like, I didn't contradict him then. I'm like, no. I wasn't eagerly waiting. I was like, come on now, let's get this thing going. I never eagerly wait, right? I don't go to Walmart and I'm standing in a long line and then there's this short line. I don't go to a long line and say, I'm just going to stand in this long line. I don't do that. I don't think any of us do that. We don't eagerly wait. There's a lot of other adverbs I could actually use for waiting, like, we resentfully wait, anxiously wait, fearfully wait, angrily wait, nauseatingly wait, frustratingly wait, cantankerously wait. Some of you, I know you, I've seen you cantankerously waiting. Vexingly wait. This tends to be our approach to waiting, right? We're never eager in waiting. And because of that, what happens is that we lose hope. And yet, here's this guy, Simeon. Simeon was eagerly waiting. We don't know how old Simeon was. The Bible doesn't actually tell us how old he was, but it gives hints, Luke hints to it that he was an older guy. It says, verse 25 and 6, he says, the Holy Spirit was upon him and had revealed to him that he would not die until he had seen the Lord's Messiah. Now, when you're thinking about death, oftentimes, when you're young, you never think about death. You're like, nah, I'm not thinking about death. You only start thinking about death when you're older. It's when you decide, oh, I better make sure I have enough retirement. And all. That's when you start thinking about this. So he's obviously older. It tells us that, maybe he was beyond the average age of life expectancy. We don't know. But we know it because the first thing he prays when he sees Jesus, the first thing he says, Lord, now let me die in peace. So obviously the guy was older in years, right? Luke also introduces us to another person in verse 36. It says, Anna, a prophet, was also there in the temple. She was the daughter of Phanuel from the tribe of Asher, and she was very old. Her husband died when they had been married only 7 years, so when she was young, she became a widow. Then she lived as a widow to the age of 84, so 50-something years as a widow, which was really hard in that part of the world at that time, waiting for the promise of the Lord. It tells us in verse 37, so she never left the temple, but stayed there day and night, worshiping God with fasting and prayer. Now, that's pretty remarkable if you think about it, right? If you've been waiting for a miracle to happen, and now you're in your 50-something year of waiting for a miracle to happen, it's pretty remarkable that you're still worshiping God, praying, and fasting. Because probably by year 35, you're probably like, okay, I've been praying and fasting for like 35 years now, and nothing has happened. Maybe I should just try a different technique. Maybe I should do something different. Maybe I should take a yoga class. I don't know. I'm just kidding. She wouldn't have said that. But you know what I'm saying? This is pretty remarkable. She came along just as Simeon was talking with Mary and Joseph, and she began praising God. She talked about the child. She talked about the child to everyone who had been waiting expectantly for God to rescue Jerusalem. So both of these people, they've been waiting for rescue. They've been waiting for a rescuer. They had not lost hope. And here's what I want you to see about Simeon and Anna, is that they didn't wait passively. It wasn't like they were standing in line just staring at the back of a head of another person in front of them and just waiting. And I know that probably doesn't make sense to you in the context of what we're talking about, but they weren't sitting around complaining about things not happening well. They didn't decide, hey, I'm not going to go to church anymore because after all, I prayed and it didn't happen, so I'm just not going to go to church. That's not what they were doing. They were actively waiting. That teaches us so much about how we are to wait. So as we remember and celebrate the birth of Jesus, we also anticipate the return of Jesus. Just as Simeon and Anna waited in a certain way, so we should wait. It tells us that Simeon was a righteous and devout man. It tells us that Anna, you know, was praising God day and night, telling everybody about the coming of the Messiah. It was almost as if she was hope. You get what I'm talking about? 50-something years go running. She's hopeful for the coming of the Messiah. At some point, would somebody say, man, Anna, I'm just so tired of you talking about that. And yet that's the attitude she had. There's something about the faith that she had, the belief that she had. So they were waiting, but they were not just standing around. They were actively waiting. They were eagerly waiting. And I want to encourage us as we wait this Advent season. You may feel like God is absent in your life. In fact, that metaphor of the blank page, you may feel like right now your relationship with God is about a blank page. God, where are you? I've been praying for this. Why hasn't this happened yet? I don't get it. I've been waiting a long time. Why isn't it? Where are you, God? You may feel that way. God's just not showing up. You've been waiting a long time, and I understand that. We are ready to be rescued. So we say, we cry out, Jesus, rescue us, rescue us, rescue us. Rescue us from racism, rescue us from terrorism, rescue us from alcoholism, rescue us from abuse, from injustice. Rescue the refugees, rescue the persecuted believers around the world. Rescue the orphans. Those are prayers that we might be praying. But more to home, maybe you're praying this, rescue us from cancer, rescue us from divorce, from mental illness, from loneliness. We're ready to be rescued. And maybe this Christmas season, that's where you are. See, we don't wait as those who have no hope. Our hope is in the fact when we celebrate Christmas, we're celebrating the birth and the return of Christ. So we can anticipate something. And man, here's the thing. It may not happen when you want it to happen. In fact, you might be here right now and you may have lost faith. You may have given up on your marriage. You may have given up on that addiction being broken. You may have. You may even be faithless. But you need to understand God has not been unfaithful to you. I don't know how much longer it's going to be. I don't know how much longer you have to wait for that rescue to happen in your life. I wish I could. I wish I could stand here and look at everyone in the eye and say, hey, for you it's 3 months, for you it's 5 years, for you it's a month, for you it's tomorrow. And yet, I wish I could do that, but then I could also point to many of you that could say, oh no, my rescue happened last week. My rescue happened last year. My rescue happened. Yeah, let me tell you a story of how long I was waiting and what God did for me. And boy, I waited a long time. I think about my own son, who somewhere around the age, I'm not going to go into detail, but somewhere around the age of 15, I lost him. Not literally lost him, but I lost him from the faith. And like 4 years ago, at the age of 26, I was able to baptize him. Those were a long 11 years. A lot of pain, a lot of prayer, and sometimes saying, God, is this ever going to happen? So I don't know. I don't know how much longer you have to wait, but this is what you need to know, that on God's calendar, there's a date circled for your rescue. And that rescue can happen. It can happen tomorrow. It may happen down the road. I don't know. But God has not been unfaithful to you. He's not forgotten you. He's coming. He's coming literally, but he's also coming in the form of a answered prayer, in a form of a miracle that you've been waiting for, in a form of the healing of your marriage or the lifting of that addiction in your life. It's coming. Jesus is coming. Amen. Let's all stand. I understand that Christmas. Let me back up a little bit. I realize that I'm expected to get up here. I'm expected as a pastor of a church to get up here and say, hey, guys, your future is bright. Your future is exciting. Your future is great. Just hang in there. Pray harder. Do more. Whatever. You know, that's kind of an expectation. And I do that. But I don't do it because it's an expectation. I do it because it's a firm belief. It's a firm belief that what God has done, he continues to do. We don't always know his timetable. We don't always know when or how it's going to happen, but he is always faithful. I've seen it over and over again. I look at Tony right here, who for years was away from the Lord for a lot of reasons. You've heard his story. And he's up here playing a guitar as a worship pastor. I mean, I could just go on with the stories of God bringing deliverance and rescue in lives of people. And so if you're here right now, and for you, your story's different. For you, it's a blank page. For you, it's God, you're nowhere in sight, and I'm suffering, and I'm struggling, I'm hurting. God sees you. God knows where you're at. Rescue is coming. Jesus is coming. Amen. Tony's going to lead us in a song of worship here in a second. And during that time of worship, I would encourage you, we have our prayer teams here. If you're here this morning and you just need prayer, maybe you're in a situation where your marriage needs healing or you need deliverance from some addiction or another. Your finances are upside down. You just saw a lady in the first service came up to me and said, I just don't have any money. I'm no gifts for the kids, nothing. I don't have any money. I have a paycheck coming and it's all going to rent. And I just have nothing left over. She's feeling hopeless. And I just want to encourage you, if you're here this morning and that's your situation, that's your story, we'd like to pray with you. We'd like to believe with you that Jesus is coming today, tomorrow, whenever in your life. Amen.
This is the Life Church Podcast.